Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today I have around my Moshe Elephant, who is the Chief Operating Officer of the Kashrus Division of the Orthodox Union, also a well-known Magid Shir for the Daf Yomi, the most popular Daf Yomi in the world, as Rabbi Weil often says. And it's a great pleasure having you. How are you, Rabbi Elephant?
Baruch Shem. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, Mr. Savitsky. Unfortunately, both of us are busy. It's not unfortunate that we're busy, but it's unfortunate that we don't get the opportunity to speak often enough.
Well, we will. We'll try to rectify that if we can, okay?
All right. At least we'll do it today on the radio.
We'll do it on the radio. Okay, that's good enough. Okay, so we're going to talk about Pesach, which is probably, from what I understand, first of all, I don't know what percentage it is. Maybe you know. But what percentage of kosher food is spent on Pesach compared to the rest of the year?
Well, what we've heard from different studies that have been done, Passover, Pesach, is the holiday that's most celebrated in the Jewish, in our Jewish family. In other words, it used to be that even Jews who weren't that religious, you know, kept Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, to some degree, went to shul, fasted, but what the current studies are showing is that Jews, if they're going to keep anything in terms of the religion, and holiday-wise, it's going to be Passover more than anything else. And I guess it's better to eat than to fast.
Right, this is true. I guess, and that's one of the reasons everyone has the Seder.
Right.
And they kind of
go back and
have a little bit, you know.
Right,
we're not
you
sure
know,
exactly
it's a way for families.
Do.
It's a way for families to connect. And again, there are different levels of observance, but clearly, Passover has become probably the most recognized Jewish symbol left to the entire Jewish community. In terms of numbers, how much of the food that's consumed kosher is Passover certified? It's probably, I would say, about 25%. But I want to qualify what I'm saying. Most of the food that people buy kosher happens to be kosher. In other words, if somebody's buying a can of Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola is not really doing anything special to make that can of soda certified or kosher. They're not, all the Coke is kosher. What's unique about the Passover certified food, that any product that bears the OUP symbol was made under special rabbinic supervision specifically for Pesach. And therefore, different than all the other foods, almost all the other foods that we certify, you know, obviously the meat and the poultry and the wine are not in the same group, but almost everything else we certify, it happens to be kosher. Here we have foods that are specifically manufactured to be kosher. And that's obviously a very unique challenge and opportunity for us in the kosher certification world.
Right. That's interesting, actually, because I remember going to Atlanta and actually having a tour of the Coke Museum. And when I came in with my wife, I'm wearing a yarmulke, and the guy who's a tour guide says, I love that Coke on Passover. He says, I go just purposely to get it. I said, well, where do you get it from? He says, I go to the Jewish neighborhood. He said, I love the Coke. He says, because it tastes better. I buy a few cases. I keep them for as long as I can because that's really the best Coke all year.
Right. Well, that's been an old challenge that Coke has, because obviously the Coca-Cola that's being manufactured for Pesach, the OUP Coca-Cola, they're using sugar, not using corn sweetener, which they very typically may use as the sweetener. Again, I'm not talking about the diet Coke. I'm talking about the regular Coke. And there are people out there who, I guess, consider themselves experts and feel that they could tell the difference between the soda that's manufactured with good old-fashioned sugar versus corn sweetener, and that's why they try to find the OUP product. Actually, Coca-Cola has told us over the years that the reason that they're using corn sweetener versus sugar is because corn sweetener is actually cheaper than sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And
gotcha.
And that's why typically they'll use corn sweetener. And though they're trying to accommodate our community in making kosher for Pesach, Coca-Cola with the real thing, they're not looking to make it part of the general supply of Coca-Cola.
Okay, since we happen to be talking about that, we're kind of going off on a tangent, but here's a question people always ask me about. If it's such a secret, the secret ingredients that go into Coca-Cola, how do we know, you know, which ones are good, and how does the OU know about it?
Well, obviously, Coca-Cola is known for its confidentiality. And in all of the agreements that we have with Coca-Cola, there are very serious agreements, legal agreements, that we would keep everything we know confidential. So I'm sort of limited in how much I could tell
That's
you. But what I can tell you is, unequivocally, that every ingredient that's used in Coca-Cola, whether it's for year-round use or specifically for Pesach use, the OU knows that that ingredient is kosher, and for Pesach, that it's kosher for Pesach.
Now, could you drink Coca-Cola anyplace in the world that you go?
Certainly anywhere in the United States you could drink Coca-Cola. We feel confident with that, even if it doesn't have the OU on the bottle or the can. I would say that Europe isn't the same. When you start traveling, if you're doing that, to Africa, I would be more concerned.
Okay, I got you. Okay. I guess maybe if you were traveling there, you'd have a lot of other problems.
Right. Actually, whenever we meet Coca-Cola, one of the discussions we have is in how many countries does the OU certify product versus in how many countries does Coca-Cola manufacture product, whose number is higher.
I got you. Okay. So anyway, talking about Pesach. So now, once people, I guess, don't really understand that the preparations for Pesach start when months and months before, right?
The preparations.
Now, what do we know? We're now actually in January of 2014. Pesach's in April. I bet that a lot of it has been done already, right?
Not a lot of it has done. Most of it has been done.
Okay.
In other words, the only products that haven't been really done are the products that we get fresh. So matzahs, although matzahs are in heavy baking, they haven't all been done. But a lot of the matzahs have been baked, and they're still being baked, obviously. But the canned goods, the candies, all of these types of products are all manufactured. You asked, when do we begin Pesach production? We begin Pesach production the day after Pesach.
Mm.
We have a rabbi, one of the rabbis on our staff, Rabbi Singer. He's busy with Pesach 12 months a year, 365 days a year, because the Pesach productions are taking place all around the year. Obviously, we all could understand that one of the most popular products that we're going to have certified for Pesach, and it's actually a segment of the kosher world that continues to grow, very interesting segment, and that's the segment of wine. And the days of, you know, a very limited variety of kosher wine is certainly long over. And we're certifying wine all around the country and all around the world. But wine, as you could understand, is manufactured when the grapes are ripe. The grapes are ripe August, September, October, depending exactly on the weather and on other factors. So all of the wine that we're all going to drink on Pesach, certainly the wines that are not from this year's crop, but even the years from this year's crop, have all been manufactured already. They're all long manufactured. So yes, we're busy with Pesach all year round, and to a great degree, we're already past Pesach 2014. I don't know if the women want to hear this, because many women probably haven't started cleaning yet. My wife has, but others haven't.
Really?
So,
no kidding. Your wife has already. Wow.
Yeah, but the OU, I'll tell you a funny story. I'm always on the radio for a couple of weeks before Pesach every night answering questions. And they called me this year that if I could come on the night before Hanukkah with questions pertaining to Hanukkah. I said, I'm not sure you're allowed to do that. He says, why? I says, because when women hear my voice, they think Pesach. So if somebody's going to hear my voice on the day before Hanukkah, when probably almost no one started cleaning for Pesach yet, I may be causing a lot of stress for no reason.
Gotcha. But your voice, so we your gave voice them, causes stress. You're saying
right. So, right? But we gave them a proper warning that this is not Pesach, it's only Hanukkah.
That's great. Now, I mean, how many products do we actually certify for Pesach? Any idea?
I don't have the final count, but it's certainly in thousands. I mean, you know, we have our directory, which is incredibly popular, and now we don't only have it available in the old-fashioned print form. We also have it online. We also have apps that work on your iPads and your iPhones and on your Droids with all of the information about the products that we're certifying for Pesach. Just to explain what I mean, there are really two types of categories. Any product that bears the OUP symbol, and again, we have to say P stands for Pesach, Passover, not Parav, but any product that has the OUP symbol is made with full-time rabbinic supervision. There is a mashgiach there for that production. But we also have in the directory a group of products which we call the gray pages, simply because those pages are printed in gray. And those are products that don't have a special Passover designation, but are kosher for Pesach even without the OUP. And they're also quite a significant list. And the Rabbonim that work here, as you know, Mr. Savitsky, because you've been very involved with our department for many years, we have 50 Rabbonim just working in our office here in headquarters in Manhattan. And they spend a lot of time investigating products that are kosher even without special Pesach designation. And that those products, like the salts and the sugars and many of the meat products, and that's also a significant part of our guide.
Now, this year I know that there's been a big revelation, quinoa, right?
Yeah, that's the news for Passover 2014.
That's the big news that everybody's talking about. So let's get to the bottom of it. What was the problem and what happened?
Okay, so as you know, Jews of Ashkenazic descent, that means from Europe, have a custom that we don't eat legumes on Pesach.
Legumes.
Legumes, which are beans, which means corn and soy and all sorts of beans. The reason for that is there are actually two reasons for that custom. And I have to emphasize, it's a custom, it's not the rule. And that's why Sephardic Jews do eat these products, including rice, probably the most popular difference. The reason we don't eat these types of products is A, because they typically grew next to wheat, and therefore there was always a concern that there may be real kernels of grain mixed into these products. And number two, since these products could be ground into flour, now you won't be able to tell, is this a grain flour, which is real chametz, or is it not a grain flour, and it's perfectly fine? So that's why this is hundreds of years, have a custom not to eat legumes on Pesach. Quinoa, it was not part of the original custom. No one in Europe, hundreds of years ago, when this custom was developed, ate quinoa, knew of quinoa. Most people in the United States didn't know about quinoa 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So what happened was, when the question started coming into the OU about quinoa, our big concern was not so much, is it in the legume family, because it really isn't, it wasn't there when the custom was established. Mm-hmm. Our greater concern was, is quinoa grown next to grain? And do we need to be concerned that there are kernels of grain mixed into the quinoa? So we have one of our rabbis, as you know, we have rabbis stationed all around the world. And one of the rabbonim who travel to South America, Central America, which is where the quinoa typically grows, a lot of it comes from Peru, is a rabbi Shoshan Guri, a real superstar, a very energetic, knowledgeable individual. And he spent a lot of time at our request investigating, can we find quinoa that we could be certain has no grain mixed into it? And we were able to identify such quinoa. And therefore, based on that determination, we are now going to be able to certify, again, produced under special production with a full-time mashgiach, but we will have quinoa that's OUP certified.
Okay, so that when you regular quinoa probably is not good.
Certainly not good. If somebody OUP has a bag of 100%, very important point you make.
Good.
If somebody has a bag of quinoa, and I know this question is going to come all the time as we get closer to Pesach, I have an unopened bag of quinoa at home. Could I use it? The answer is absolutely not.
Okay.
It's also interesting just to mention, we started this last year, and actually it's taken off quite popularly. Last year, the OU made a decision that we're going to certify products that are called OU Kitneys. There is a significant Sephardi community.
Sure.
And these are individuals who eat kidneys on Pesach. There's no reason that they shouldn't. That's their custom. And we got calls from many Rabbonim and people from the Sephardi community saying, OU, why are you ignoring us? Why don't you have products certified? We understand Ashkenazic Jews don't eat it, but we want to be able to eat it. So we did begin the OU kidney symbol. And actually, there are going to be quite a number of OU Kidneys products available this year.
Huh.
Popcorn.
Oh, really
popcorn is going to be available.
Popcorn?
So, yeah, so if you're a Sephardi and you couldn't survive the 8 days of Pesach without popcorn, now Baruch Hashem, you won't have that problem.
You'll have it. You won't have to worry.
Right.
So, I mean, the quinoa that we're going to produce, is there enough of that to meet the demand, or probably
well,
not?
Well, it's a great question. First of all, I don't know how much of the demand there is. You know, I'll tell you a little secret. Why is quinoa...
Well, if you're going to say it on the program, it's not going to be a secret.
Okay, so I'll tell everybody a secret.
Okay.
Why is quinoa such an important product? You know, what made quinoa such a big deal? How often do you eat quinoa, Mr. Savitsky?
Probably not too often.
Right, so why is it so important? The reason is that quinoa is not that popular, but sushi is very popular. And you can't use the rice on Pesach. So quinoa is a good substitute for the rice.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So there are people who can't survive 8 days of Pesach without sushi. This gives them the opportunity to have a kosher variety of sushi. So now the question is, how much sushi will be eaten on Pesach? And then we'll know if we'll have enough quinoa.
Okay. Now, other kosher agencies, are they also going to be certifying quinoa?
That is a great question, and I'll tell you why I want to address it. I want to address it because you asked.
Okay.
But I'll tell you something very interesting. Just last week, I happened to have been in Toronto at a meeting with some other kosher agencies. And this is a real testimony of where the OU stands in the world of kosher.
Okay.
And they said to me, since all the years, the OU policy was that we weren't necessarily recommending quinoa for Pesach, and we didn't have OU certified quinoa for Pesach. That was their position as well. But as soon as Rabbi Ganek made the announcement this year that we're going to be having OU certified quinoa, they say we always just follow the OU lead. And if it's good for the OU, it's good for us. So I think that there's going to be a lot of people who in previous years weren't using quinoa, and a lot of certification agencies who weren't saying anything about quinoa. All of a sudden this year, you're going to be finding them say, if it's good for the OU, it's good for us.
Yeah, but the thing is this, we said it's okay because we were able to identify a place where there's not going to be a mix-up. I mean, are they going to be able to find
places? No, they're going to tell their clients, their consumers, to look for the OUP quinoa.
Oh, I see. Okay, so they're going to tell people. So all these hotels and
right.
other places, the Baruch Hashem, everyone will be able to have all the sushi they need. It won't be
right.
a problem.
Right.
All right, thank God. We saved the Jewish community.
Right.
Now, once I have you on the line, I have to ask you a question, because this is a question that I know you get asked 1,000 times, and everyone does. The OUD and the policy with the OUD, people tell me, you know, they read it, it's really not dairy, and they read the ingredients, and so therefore they can have it. I even saw something, I think, from the CRC that talked about Oreo cookies, that said the certain Oreo cookies you could eat, and you could have, don't eat them with meat, but you could eat them, you know, afterwards in their power. What is the story with this?
Okay, so the question, just to go off for a second before I answer your specific question, we get 300 questions a week about Oreo cookies. It's the most popularly asked question at the OU. And Oreo cookies, the plain ones, you know, the old-fashioned Oreo cookies, they have all different types of varieties now, but the old-fashioned ones are indeed DE. The definition of DE is dairy equipment. And as you correctly said, Mr. Savitsky, the halacha says that if something is made on dairy equipment, but is no dairy in the product, you're not allowed to eat that product with meat, but you could eat it after meat. The classical example I give is if you have a pot at home that's a dairy pot, and you cook spaghetti in that pot, you're not allowed to eat that spaghetti with meat, but you're allowed to eat that spaghetti after you ate meat. You don't need to wait the 6 hours if that's your custom. So the Oreo cookies are DE. There's no dairy in them. So why doesn't the OU list it as DE? So there's a few points to make. Number one, the OU does not have a DE designation. The reason we don't have a DE designation is twofold. First of all, not everybody is as knowledgeable in the intricacies of kosher law to understand the difference in law between a dairy and dairy equipment. And as you know probably better than anyone else, because you're the roving ambassador of the OU, there are a lot of people around the world and around the country eating OU products that don't necessarily know the halacha that well. Second of all, you know, when we say something is DE, we would need to take perfect responsibility that there's no residue at all on the equipment. And our supervisors, our rabbinic field representatives, aren't always able to take that, aren't always willing to take that responsibility. Moreover, in the case of Oreo specifically, Kraft Nabisco, who own Oreo, have told us we want to leave the OUD symbol on the Oreo cookie because we want to have the right. They're not doing it. They're not planning of doing it currently. But we want to have the ability to bring dairy into the Oreo cookie and not have to discard millions of dollars of labels if it's not labeled OUD. So I can assure your listeners that the plain Oreo cookie is indeed just dairy equipment, but something that they should pay attention to.
Okay, because they'll really never, I mean, they're really never going to know. I mean, I presume that if they do change it somehow.
We'll publicize it very heavily.
Right, even though it says OUD anyway, but we'll tell them.
We'll tell the world that now it's really dairy.
Right. The D is not a small letter. It's a capital now.
Right,
there,
right.
So, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, everything about Pesach and Kashrus, we can go on and on and on and on, but the program lasts about 20 minutes. And believe it or not, we've actually used up all the time. But I think you could see, the people in the audience could see, Rabbi Elton, then I can go on and talk about this forever because it's just so interesting. Well, listen, Rabbi Elton, thank you so much for coming on the program and for enlightening us, and look forward to doing it again. Be well. Take care. Bye-bye.
Nice to speak to you.
Bye-bye.